621, 1320 WILS. My next guest, Jason Riley, is here, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. He's a columnist for the Wall Street Journal, commentator for Fox News, and he's got a brand new book, False Black Power. That's with a question mark. Jason, thank you for joining us on WILS.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, what's the question? I mean, I guess it's just a simple one, but what are you asking in that title?
Well, what I'm getting at is I'm trying to contrast false power, what I would consider political power, with true power, and that I think is cultural capital, human capital. And what I'm doing is assessing a civil rights strategy that's been in place since the 1960s, when attention shifted to putting more black officials in office, seeking political power in the hopes that that would help blacks rise socioeconomically. I think the culmination of that effort was the Obama presidency. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a good time to look back and see how this effort had fared over the past half century. And I conclude that it just hasn't done what proponents said it would do. Yeah. The black gaps and black-white gaps and everything from income and educational attainment, poverty and so forth, have not done what we were told would happen if we just elected more black officials.
What personally made you want to write this book to begin with?
Well, I wanted to make that point. I mean, I think that it's time to reevaluate that strategy. I think if you look at the experience of other groups that came to this country and moved from poverty to prosperity, whether you're talking about Italians or Jews or Germans or Asians, they have not sought to emphasize political power. Mm-hmm. They've developed themselves culturally, built up human capital first, and then turned their attention to politics by and large. There is a counterexample in the Irish, who did seek political power early and successfully, running political machines in places like Boston, Philadelphia, and New York in the late 1800s, early 1900s. But they were the slowest of all immigrant groups from Europe to rise in this country. And it wasn't really until the demise of those political machines that we saw any real increase in the size of the Irish middle class. So you can try and do it politically. That is one route to take, but it's not a particularly efficient route.
Right, but do you view the black community in the U.S. as having different challenges than these other groups?
I guess everyone has different challenges, but the question...
Well, considering the history, of course.
There are people who say comparisons between blacks and immigrants from other parts of Europe are not apples to apples. So to those people, I say, okay, well, then let's compare blacks today to blacks of yesterday. So if you look to the first half of the 20th century, before the black leadership turned to seeking political power to the extent that they have since the 1960s, mm-hmm. what you saw in the first half of the 20th century were these gaps closing in income, in home ownership, in educational attainment, flights from poverty, and so forth.
You're talking about black communities before the 1960s.
Exactly.
And what was that experience?
You saw these racial gaps closing.
Yeah, how would you describe black communities before the 1960s in the U.S. then?
Well, they obviously had a great deal of challenges. You had legal discrimination. You had no political power for blacks virtually in this period, yet you saw racial gaps closing. Mm-hmm. And in the post-60s black America, you saw those trends either slow, stall, or in some cases reverse course. So as blacks have gained more political clout, the focus on human capital has not been there. And we've seen a lot of these trends reverse themselves.
Why don't we see both improving, both human capital and political clout? Why can't that be done?
Well, it's not impossible. I think it's a matter of emphasis, not a matter of doing one or the other. It's not an argument for blacks to disengage from politics or not run for office. It's just that what has the focus been? And I think that the focusing on electing more black officials hasn't paid off. And by the way, it has worked on its own terms. In other words, the number of black elected officials in this country has risen from fewer than 1,500 in 1970 to more than 10,000 by 2010, including a black president, including in major cities. You've had blacks running Cleveland, Philadelphia, Detroit, Los Angeles, Atlanta, Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. So it's not as if the strategy hasn't paid off on those terms. It's just that the socioeconomic progress that we were told would follow suit has not happened. And I think that is because the focus was taken off of developing that human capital that, and cultural capital that we saw in the first half of the 20th century, and instead pursuing more identity politics and political clout.
We're talking to Jason Riley. His brand new book is False Black Power. Now, what's your background, Jason? How did you? How would you say you became a conservative yourself?
Oh, wow. Well, I'm a journalist by training. I worked for the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal for more than 20 years. But I think my political philosophy started taking form in college when I started reading people like Thomas Sowell and Shelby Steele and Walter Williams and Glenn Lowry. They had a tremendous impact on my intellectual development, and that was probably where it started.
You say the focus was taken off the human capital. Now, who actually did that in the community, would you say? Who's the one that's been, who have been taking that focus away from that?
Well, it was the leadership. This in some sense goes back to the debates between W.E.B. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington on what the focus should be. Should we be trying to integrate political institutions, or should we be focused on bettering ourselves, building that human capital? When I talk about human capital, I mean skills and knowledge that you're going to be able to use to advance economically. When I'm talking about culture, I'm talking about attitudes and behaviors and values. And the focus on developing those is what was prominent in the first half of the 20th century. And then in the 60s, we get the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, and which, of course, I think made this country more fair and just for everyone. And it was the focus on getting that done, I think, was the correct focus. But what happened after that is that the black leadership said, okay, now we have the right to vote. We want racially gerrymandered voting districts to get certain people elected to Congress. We need to be running these cities where a lot of black folks live. Mm-hmm. And if we can do that, if we can focus on that, the rest will take care of itself. And I think that's what was the mistake.
How do you put the focus back on human capital, on culture and so on?
Well, I think that's something the black community is going to have to work out on its own. I don't think these are political; these aren't political problems, and I don't think they lend themselves necessarily to political solutions. Mm-hmm. And it's something because once that black official gets elected, then they start behaving like a politician, and their priorities change, and so they have to keep happy the people who help put them in office. And I don't mean the voters; I mean the special interests. So you get someone like Barack Obama winning office, even though, you know, school choice is very popular in the black community, particularly low-income black communities, he opposes it as president, trying to shut down a voucher program in D.C. or a statewide program in Louisiana, not because it doesn't work or isn't popular, but because he needs a support from the teachers' unions to help his political career, and they oppose school choice. So here you see a politician mm-hmm. behaving like a politician. And so I don't see looking to political saviors to solve some of these problems we see in terms of these racial gaps. That's something that's going to have to come from the community. Now, there is a role for public policy makers to play, and mm-hmm. I think that role is mostly to stop doing things that we know don't work, trapping kids in failing schools.
When you look at black political leaders nowadays, there's just a minute here left, who would you say are some of the best ones?
I don't look at it that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I look at political leaders, I look at people who I think are helping the black community and people who I don't think are helping the black community, people who are helping mostly themselves.
Yeah, who would you say is helping?
And I don't break that down by black and white.
Okay.
I'm sorry?
No, I was going to say, well, we just have 20 seconds left here. Can you name one or two politicians that you feel are helping the black community right now?
Well, I
if not, then...
No, I don't see...
we'll leave it there.
I'm not a political saviors kind of guy. I see people working in black communities that are doing good things, prison reentry programs, neighborhood development, mentoring, people who are starting charter schools and voucher programs that I think help the black community. Yeah. I mean, those are the people I look to, and those are the people I think that are doing the necessary work that needs to be done.
Jason Riley, the book is False Black Power. Jason Riley, a Manhattan Institute fellow right here on WILS. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
We will be right back with more.